Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get into today's amazing guest, we want to draw your attention to my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And there you can see the wonderful film on my expedition the NFL did on my journey to Mount Everest, number one. Number two, there's over 225 different podcasts of incredible people like today's guest doing amazing things that you should go check into. Please go to iTunes and give a ratings and review. It helps with the popularity of the show. And finally, I continue to raise money for Higher Ground, my campaign, Amelia's Everest. My daughter has epilepsy, trying to help her and others get through whatever their challenges are. On my website, 100% of all the proceeds go to Higher Ground, and it does what it should do, which is help people, and we should all pay it forward. And that's our duty, I believe, in the world. Okay, I want to welcome a really cool dude that it happened to be on his podcast last week. And I can't remember again how we actually bumped into each other, but his name is Ethan Suppley. Ethan, how you doing?
I'm good, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, I got the unique invite from you to be on your podcast, and you know, and I was going through, and you're asking so many insightful questions, and you know, it, as I looked into your background, and as I mentioned just a minute ago, you know, I want to get into some of this because there's some really fascinating things about your career. First of all, you are a very accomplished movie star. I mean, the amount of the films you've done, well over 50, there's a lot of big names out there, and we'll get into that. And you've also, not only have you been in all these films, but you have also played along with other guys who are like at the top of their game, Denzel Washington, you know, people like that. But before we get into that, you know, I'm always fascinated on how you got into what you do. And then there's a big, big component here about your mission in life as it relates to your weight and some addiction stuff that I know a lot of people out there, you know, have gone through and continue to go through, and how you fight through all that, and your identity too within these films because of the way they've cast you in certain ways. And so let's start back. I think you were born in New York, might have been raised in LA, but the influence for you to actually get into the film industry, the movie industry, the television biz, how did that first happen?
Well, my parents were actors in the 60s. They went to a university in Pittsburgh that had a prestigious drama school, drama department, and they met doing a play. And then before I was born, they were both professional stage actors. And about 12 years later, my mother winds up pregnant with me, and they kind of looked at their circumstances and thought this is not the greatest environment to raise a kid in. So they quit acting. So they weren't actors when I was born, and I never knew them as professional actors, but it was something that was highly discussed within our house. My first pets were named Stanley and Stella after the characters in A Streetcar Named Desire, and Tennessee Williams plays were something that were read to me when I was a little kid. And so it was just something I was very aware of. And then being raised in Los Angeles, I was at school with a number of actors, and I was never very comfortable with myself. And I kind of fell in love with this idea of being able to create or exist as other people. And so whether that was just a distraction from my own mental garbage that I was dealing with, if I could assume another identity, I didn't have to deal with it anymore. And so that was part of the allure. And then the secondary allure as a professional actor was that it felt like a bit of a distraction. If somebody was looking at me, it no longer was necessarily about them seeing the horror of my body, because that's what I considered to be. It was about them possibly wondering if they recognized me from a movie or TV show.
That's really fascinating. As you got into these different movies, I'm going to name a couple of them. Remember the Titans, Cold Mountain, The Wolf of Wall Street, My Name is Earl. I mean, there's a lot of them. It's really fascinating. And, you know, it's interesting because you are, I hope you take this in the right way. There are some like Leonardo DiCaprio, right? Who was your co-star in The Wolf of Wall Street, and Jonah Hill, you know, guys like that walk down the street. And I can't imagine what it's like to go into a mall or a restaurant. Right. And not that you don't get recognized. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, but that's I'm looking at that. That's a different level in my little world of playing in the NFL. You know, there's the Joe Montanas and Dan Marinos, and those guys were the guy I recognized. I could walk in anywhere. Nobody recognized me. I was just, you know, I was there, but I was a supporting cast. And I would have to imagine that, like in your world, the bottom line is you're a working actor, and so many people are aspiring actors. You've got to be like in that 1% of being able to keep busy and produce all these different exceptional films and be a part of these different casts. These aren't like B movies. These are top rung. You know, you're on that category. So it just must be amazing to play alongside. I mean, that's one of the things, you know, I'm trying to relate this a little bit because we're both in fields that was so hard to get into. And for me, going back into the NFL, that's the 1% of the 1%. And, you know, I just felt so proud when I was with the Raiders or the Saints, and I've got all these, you know, these famous classical players, Howie Long, he's still on TV, you know, with Fox, and, you know, called my teammates, and you have that same opportunity to be around and learn from them and what makes them great.
Yeah, it is wonderful. You know, I think it's a bizarre thing because I think outside of the true superstars, I think of like a guy like myself, and I think probably there were thousands, if not tens of thousands of people who probably could have done the jobs that I've done as well or better than I did them. And I do wonder what luck or, you know, and then if I try to get super like objectivist about it and think, well, no, I must have some ability to communicate in other ways that allows me to get these jobs, you know, like I can talk in a meeting or, you know, I'm affable or whatever it is, I'm friendly at work. But it is always something I don't take that for granted. It is a very hard business to get in, and I'm very proud of the work that I've done.
Well, what I call it is authentic. I think what, you know, seeing you on screen to me, not, you know, up until last week, not knowing you, you've just been a very authentic actor. You know, that you're when you come through and the things that come out of your mouth, you're very sincere, and it comes through, jumps off to me, it jumps off the screen. One of the things that I think one of the reasons why you've gotten into podcasting, this is my interpretation, but this kind of this big lifelong journey has been about your identity with your weight loss and things like that. And tell me if I'm wrong when I say that, but I think your top weight's been 530 pounds. Yeah, but at the same time, you've lost like 255. You become really committed to the art of staying really healthy and being addicted to that versus food and getting really ripped out. And I've seen these amazing pictures of a really defined body, you know, with all the weightlifting and cardio and stuff like that you're doing. But I want to ask you about the identity in the films, because so many of those earlier successes were built around kind of this larger character. And now you're really turning yourself into this kind of shape sculpture. And has that helped you or not helped you in terms of going out and finding more jobs?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I could say that I probably have different feelings about this at different times. I continue to work I leave tomorrow to go to Syracuse to shoot a movie right up into Christmas. I spent 4 months in Mexico City making a movie this year. I have a movie coming out with Channing Tatum called Dog. So it hasn't stopped me from working, but I don't know. I don't know that I had the same career in the early to mid, like when I started doing My Name is Earl, I don't know that I had the same film career as I had in the mid to late 90s. You know what I mean? So I don't know. These things ebb and flow. To me, at the end of the day, it's somewhat irrelevant. I have had shocking identity shifts where weight loss has caused me personally to not understand and not be comfortable with who I am. And that was when I lost weight very, very rapidly and got very, very small, basically. And I was not comfortable. And then I gained way too much weight back. And since about 2016, I've been very slowly losing weight and trying to retain the muscle I have so that when I'm as lean as I can possibly get, I'm still a big guy, because that is really how I identify myself. Having been massively big my whole life, I am more comfortable filling up more physical space. So now I want to get as lean as possible and still be as big as possible. You know, not like one of these mass monster guys that you see in bodybuilding things, but just like a substantial size, which I am. I'm 265 pounds today. That's pretty damn big. You know, you play football, that's still pretty big. I know you got guys on the offensive line that are 300 plus. Oh. So I'm not that big, but like, you know, as far as identity goes and getting work, I think at the end of the day, I prefer my life in this kind of healthier iteration. I have less literal physical pain, less emotional and mental anxieties. I feel that I'm accomplishing something every day and putting my body to use in a way that actually makes me feel better mentally and physically. And so the trade-off between possibly getting paid more to be in a movie or having a larger role in a movie and get, you know, but sacrificing this health and this feeling of well-being, it is not even a trade-off I consider at all to be viable.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's all about happiness and the happiness factor and where you fit in. Let me ask you this about addiction, because I said this interesting because this had nothing to do with you, but this was about a month ago and we were out to dinner with somebody and somehow the word addiction came up and I said, well, it's a good thing I'm not addicted to anything. And this guy looked across the table and he goes, seriously, you're addicted to working out, right? Like, you know, doing my 2-a-days and my commitment to going uphill and all that kind of stuff. So I guess that's right. Because I if I don't go a day or two, I mean, I work out 7 days a week, right? And if I skip a day, I feel bad about myself and my mind just goes, you know, upside down. And for you, as it relates to food, when you start going on that yo-yo back and forth, wherever that is, and I'm just trying to understand this because I don't understand it, which is it because there are certain foods that blow you up that you just love, you're craving, you know, certain kind of carbs or something? Or what is it that allows you to let that slip just a little bit that goes the wrong way that you don't want to be at?
Yeah. Well, let me say first, just because I think language can be very powerful, I do not consider things addictive that are beneficial. So like we have to drink water, hydrate. Mm-hmm. I don't consider that we're addicted to hydrating, you know, and I would think if somebody was, and you can overhydrate too. You can drink so much water that you reduce your electrolytes and your sodium so low that it can be very bad and throw you into arrhythmia and be very bad. So if you had a propensity to overhydrate to the point where it was detrimental to your survival, I might think of that as an addiction. But I am a sober person now going on 20 years. So I had addiction to substances. I had a very addictive relationship with food. And I would say for a period of time, I tried to put the onus of responsibility into certain types of foods themselves. And that was always a long-term failure for me, because the reality is it's not hard to lose weight. It's actually fairly easy to lose weight. And I got into this really tricky thing too with setting goals, where I would not think through goals long or hard enough or in the right terms. And so I would set a goal for myself, like I want to be 200 pounds, or the goal is I want to lose weight. And that's an attainable goal. But when you don't have a goal for the very next moment after you've achieved that, I have found that the goal is kind of worthless. Like as a goal, weight loss can be beneficial, but I would say that the actual goal, if you think through it, is having a life without having excess weight, you know, or one of these things. So I've had to get very specific with my goals, and just with even the way that I talk to myself and make plans, because I can make a plan that sounds great and that for all intents and purposes is going to get me what I want. And then when I find myself in a moment reflecting of like, how did that plan go awry? It was like, well, the plan was for a single moment of like, you know, I want to be 200 pounds. Okay, what happens the minute after I achieve that goal of being 200 pounds? Where's the plan to sustain that? Or where's the plan to, you know, have that not just be dehydration and lean tissue loss and obviously fat loss too, but what if I just wanted to lose 100 pounds in fat? Like, how do I achieve that goal? So all of these things, as far as addiction goes, I just look at anything that is beneficial to me. I wouldn't categorize it as addiction. So if your life is better because you're working out twice a day, I suppose in some definition, it could fit that, you know, just like you could say, like you could talk about your diet and there's a definition that is just the way you eat is your diet versus the definition that is restrictive eating. But I found over trial and error and doing this for a long time, when I would place the responsibility into something like food and say, this is the cause for my condition, I would ultimately fail. And that's not to diminish anyone with autoimmune or celiac or any of these real, you know, a severe allergy to foods. You know, you can't say to a guy who's allergic to peanuts, just eat the peanuts and be responsible for it. That's not really going to work. But I don't have allergies or autoimmune. So when I would get into like, you know, complex carbohydrates are bad, or sugar's the root cause of this, or it's fast food, ultimately, I would fail because I could have my behavior be counterproductive with any type of food. I can overeat steak, I can overeat cheese, I can overeat anything. And if that is my real problem, then it's not the food itself.
Yeah. I'm wondering too, like when you go, I'm such a, you know, a calculated, again, when I wake up, I always think about my workout. Like I build my whole day around my workout, right? And so I want to relate this to you going off to Syracuse or down to Mexico City for 4 months, right? And I just got back from Seattle recently. And so where I stayed, I mean, everything was calculated around, you know, does this hotel have a gym, and how far is it to the bike path, and where can I start doing my jog or whatever it is. Do you find that's a challenge when you go on these extended shoots? Cause you want to keep your working out and going to the gym and doing it. Do you find that you get in that mode of like, you get booked, it's awesome, but now you're starting to look around like, where is it going to be convenient for you to continue down that same path?
100%. And that has become, you know, there's when you go to do a movie, there are a lot of negotiations, and I have a lawyer talking to the lawyer that works for the studio that's making the movie, and they're hashing everything out. And a lot of the last few years have been when I have to travel, you know, the types of amenities I have where I'm staying. Is it an apartment or a hotel? If it's a hotel, it's got to have a refrigerator and a microwave. And, you know, like, for instance, right now, I leave tomorrow to Syracuse, and I have food scheduled to be shipped to the hotel on Friday. The hotel's kitchen will be storing it for me. Like, you know, it becomes complicated in that way. But then there are also like family trips where I'm responsible for it. I'm not just telling people what I need. And so I have to figure out where I'm going to work out, where I'm going to get food. And all those things become a little bit more severe for me than they are for my wife or kids, who don't have these same issues that I have and can just show up at an airport hungry and get something that's not going to mess their lives up, you know?
Yeah, no, I do know. And, you know, I think you have four kids. You've been married for a long time. And that adds a whole new and different dynamic, you know, to the whole planning food and all that kind of stuff. Because, as you know, kids kind of have their own agenda. And then when they're hungry, you got to feed them, and it throws you off a little bit. So there's a whole discipline around that. You have a really cool podcast called American Glutton. And so tell me, the name, you know, it fascinates me. Like, well, what is the genesis of that name, and why did you want to name your podcast show that?
I feel like I am just really such a glutton, and I do tend to overdo stuff if I'm left unchecked, and whether that's like becoming overly obsessed with philosophy or, you know, working out too much. In 2011, I went to France and rode all the stages of the Tour de France. And even that kind of thing becomes like this thing that's too much. I find that in talking about that, I'm able to kind of govern myself or search out moderation. And it's just trying to be as open as possible so that I can then see areas of my life that I can attack from a different way or create new habits around. And you know, I've lost weight before. I've been much thinner than I am now, and I never talked about it. And then when it was talked about, some of the things that were talked about were negative, and so that hurt my feelings and made me not want to talk about it. And I just found that this time around, that not only can I talk about it in the terms that I want to talk about it in and ignore any of the BS comments that are negative, but I can also potentially be a sounding board for other people or communicate about things that are not really communicated. You know, one of the most shocking things to me with massive weight loss was excess skin, which the first time I lost a lot of weight, I kind of was just kept waiting for the skin to tighten up. And it doesn't do that, you know, if you are massively overweight, you know, this is like 50 to 100 pounds plus overweight for a long period of time, your skin grows to this new size and your body cannot catabolize skin like it can fat or lean tissue. And so you are left with massive billowing folds of loose skin. That's not really openly discussed, you know, and as we as a society grow ever larger for longer periods of time, anybody going into this idea of I'm going to lose 50 pounds that I've had for a couple of years is going to be confronted with loose skin. And I just think that that's something you should be aware of, because it's kind of shocking if you're not aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I mean, I think it's a commitment to whatever you're committed to, and anybody with negative comments, you know, that's their issue. And at the end of the day, we all have our stuff. And those people that don't, you know, I mentioned before, the one thing that jumps out to me on screen about you is how authentic you are. And to stand up, be a public figure, say, listen, I don't have it all figured out, and here are some of my issues. I think that helps so many people. I mean, again, we just talked about before we went live about somebody that reached out to me after our podcast about whatever they're going through. And it's a tough thing. And because of our conversation, she felt inspired to, you know, go forward, take a step forward. And that's what we all have to do. And we're all on our own personal journey. There's no magic pill that it takes to get through these things, and whatever it takes to get you to, again, what you define as happiness in your life, what you want your life to be about, is personal to you. And if people can identify with that and understand it, then that's great. They're your supporters. And if they're not, they're negative voices and you don't need them around anyhow. So to me, that doesn't really matter. In terms of, I want to go once back on the film stuff, because again, you've been so brilliant in so many different films. What of all these great films, maybe some are more popular than others, have been your most enjoyable experience? I'm just looking for one. Like, sure. You came out of that, and you know the people you were around was just fantastic, and again, positive voices, and the products, and you, whatever scenes you did, you know, you felt like you were on. You know, what would that be?
Oh, it's not even a movie. It's a television show. And it's very easy for me to pinpoint this. In 2016, 2017, I did two seasons of a television series called Chance. It's on Hulu, if people want to check it out. It was me and Hugh Laurie in this kind of noirish drama thriller type show that was set in San Francisco. And I played a guy based on a real person named Tom Kier, who his job is to train military, like special forces dudes, in how to fight with knives. That's his job. He is considered an edged weapons specialist by the government, basically. And so he goes out to Virginia Beach and trains these guys in how to use blades. And the character I played was based on him, not in literal terms, but loosely based on him. And so Tom came out and I got to meet him and train with him and meet his whole crew and train with them. And it just became this really, like, it became a job that allowed for a lot of growth within my own life, which was really amazing. And the writer was a guy named Ken Nunn, who's a novelist, who's a really brilliant author, and the executive producer and creator is this gal named Alexandra Cunningham, who's also just a total badass. And then wonderful Irish gentleman named Lenny Abramson directed it. And so that job is the one that I so often go back to and go like, God, that was something really, really special.
That's so cool. I will drop a name really quick. Because she is your sister-in-law, Juliet Lewis. Have you been able to be in any film or TV pilots with her?
When we were doing My Name is Earl, we were lucky enough to get her to come on My Name is Earl. And my wife and her father, a brilliant actor named Jeffrey Lewis, also came on. We had so many great people come and do that show, and that I think was the only time Juliet and I have ever worked together.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I believe where people can find you is AmericanGlutton.com. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah, that's where we do a lot of Q&As, like on the show. We'll always, either every episode or once a week, we have an episode that's about answering questions that people submit. And I've gotten tens of thousands of questions. And so it might take me quite a while to get through all of them. But if you want to submit a question, that would be the place. Or, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, listen, best of luck to you and your shooting up in Syracuse. We continue to see great things from your film life, your TV life. I feel very honored to have met you and to have been on your podcast. And so deep appreciation on my end. And, you know, like for all of us, just keep the journey. And I'm on the same journey, man. I'm talking about what's next for me, you know, after Everest and my last 10 years. And the reason why the name of the show is Finding Your Summit is truly because it sounds like you are in the process, I'm still in the process of finding my summit. You go and you hit the peak and you go down to the valley and you're right back up, and it's a life's journey. And that's what you've been on. So, you know, kudos to you for going down that, being authentic, coming on this podcast. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. There he is, the one, the only, Ethan Suplee. Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Attention parents and grandparents. If you're looking for a gift that's more than just a toy, give them something that inspires confidence and adventure all year long. Give them a Guardian bike, the easiest, safest, and number one kids bike on the market. With USA-made, kid-specific frames and patented safety technology, kids are learning to ride in just one day. No training wheels needed. It's why Guardian is America's favorite kids' bike and the New York Times and Wirecutter's top pick 3 years in a row. This holiday season, Guardian is offering their biggest deal of the year. Up to 40% in savings on all bikes, plus $100 in free accessories. Guardian bikes have become the most sought-after gifts of the season, and inventory is going fast, so don't wait. Join over 500,000 happy families who've discovered the magic of Guardian. Shop now at guardianbikes.com. That's guardianbikes.com.